Hello, Matt.
Hello, Bill.
How are you doing?
I am well. Good to have you back after being AWOL last week.
Well, I enjoyed the all-conservative edition while I was gone.
Yes, you know, I think we kept the ideology out of it for the most part. We talked mostly about strategy and whatnot, I think. So.
I don't mean to be condescending. Forgive me if I am. But I feel like I don't see a lot of, you know, conservative dialogue that is sort of as open and candid as you two are. If I'm watching a Fox News roundtable, I don't get a lot of interesting back and forth.
Well,
I get a lot of everyone agreeing with each other.
That has to do with people being intellectually honest or not, as much as it has to do with the venue. I mean, I think that when you're on TV, time is so limited. You sort of feel like you have to score points and make points in a very restricted way, as opposed to, you know, a show like this, I think, empowers us to have lengthier discussions, which allows you to concede a point, and then, but that's a very good point, but let me offer that. This really off to a more thoughtful conversation. I think it's the medium more than the people.
Understood. But if you didn't get a chance to see it, I'd go back and check that out. Since you and Kristen talked, it's been a pretty, I'd say, turbulent week for the Republican presidential race. Perhaps now that the race is sort of fully underway, you know, the pretenders have backed off. Newt's in. Romney gave a big health care speech. There's a sense that the field is a little bit more settled, if not quite all the way there. But the prominent names are having a rough go of it, and most of the incoming seems to be coming from fellow conservatives. So how do you think conservative bloggers are dealing with, you know, let's say Newt in particular for the moment, because he's the one who's gotten the most attention? Is he getting any slack from the blogosphere, or are people just saying, I've had enough of this guy?
Well, I think he's being beaten up on all sides. You got to remember, you know, Newt, for all of his brilliance, he's done a lot of things to anger conservatives and conservatives over the year, including appearing in a TV ad about, you know, global warming or something with Nancy Pelosi, and endorsing and supporting Didi Scozzafava in high-profile special elections. So I would say that Newt has been beat up a fair share by conservatives, including Rush Limbaugh. He was actually on Rush Limbaugh today, Thursday, where he interestingly denied that his comments on Meet the Press about right-wing social engineering had anything to do with Paul Ryan, that he never actually mentioned Paul Ryan, which is technically true, but it's hard to believe he wasn't.
Well, but one of the responses was in response to a reference directly to Paul Ryan. I mean, I don't see how you interpret this cause as being anything but about the House Republican budget.
It's hard. I was watching it live and live tweeting the Meet the Press debate, or not debate, but interview, and I, at the time, interpreted it to be an attack on Paul Ryan, as I think did everybody else. And it's ironic, because I thought that Newt actually was doing really well in this Rush Limbaugh appearance and maybe turned the corner, and yet he just had to throw that in there, which I think was really but I think it really trips him up, because it's too cute by half. It's really not believable, and I think it kind of plays into the narrative that Newt is a bit Clintonian and, you know, just shooting straight with people.
Well, and there's been an argument that, you know, is Newt prepared to deal with a 21st century political campaign in a new media landscape where everything is YouTube and every utterance gets picked apart on blogs, and it's much harder to clean up past mistakes, perhaps, as it was before. And here's someone who presents himself as being a futurist, who has an active Twitter feed, who dealt with the Meet the Press interview by cutting his own slapdash web video. So you see, you know, he understands kind of new media in theory, but he keeps doing things that get you into tons of trouble in a new media environment, it
right.
seems.
Well, I think that's a fascinating theory, and there's a great analogy. I forget who initially pushed this, but it was a comparison between Clinton and Gingrich, which was that they were both, you know, very much creatures of the early 90s. And Clinton in 2008 had this same problem, right, where he was trying to help Hillary Clinton, and he was making a lot of mistakes. And so there's a very fascinating theory that Clinton, that Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich, both were sort of creatures from the early 90s, and their shtick worked great then, not so much now. I don't know. I don't know if I buy that or not. Maybe there's something to it.
So you could argue that both of those politicians
right.
really had their issues in the 90s. They didn't have a...
Exactly.
Neither one had a free
ride. I tend to think that Newt's problems have more to do with his ego than they do with him not adapting to new media. Interestingly, I will say this. I put up I conducted an interview in 2007 with Newt Gingrich in Atlanta, Georgia, when I worked at townhall.com. And during that interview, which I posted at the Daily Caller recently to Little Fanfare, Newt told me that if he announced for president, he would do so during an hour-long C-SPAN speech because the issues confronting him are, you know, really too deep to do anything less than an hour-long speech. Of course, he did it via Twitter and tweeting out a YouTube video. He also told me in 2007 that he would not appear in any debates with like 10 other candidates. He would only do one-on-one debates. So we'll see if he sticks to that.
I guess perhaps, forgive me if I'm digressing a bit, maybe the difference is that there's been a change in the conservative movement that is much more willing to criticize apostates than maybe even as early as 3 years ago. I feel that, you know, conservative internal criticism during the Bush era I thought was pretty minimal. I mean, I know conservatives had their problems with Bush, but I think they tend to keep that criticism pretty quiet over the course of that presidency and only sort of let it loose after he left. But now, sort of post-Tea Party, there's this deep skepticism of Republican Party leadership. Anyone that offers any kind of nuance, any sort of sense of compromise, they get drummed out pretty quickly.
I think there's truth to that, certainly. I also think, and some of that's good, some of that's healthy, by the way. I also think that there's a sort of a lack of reverence and respect, and that happens in some cases. And I have to tell you, a couple of things that happened to Newt that sort of are products of, probably products of the new media / cable TV age, where one guy captured on tape shaking his hand, berating him in Iowa. Another gay activist glitter on him. Now, of course, the gay activist wasn't conservative, presumably, and so it's not an example of a conservative punishing an apostate. But still in all, I think that, you know, this also speaks to the fact that there was a time, probably not just within conservatism, but within the culture, when people regarded elected officials more and maybe gave them a little bit more respect. And Newt is clearly getting none of that.
And, you know, and perhaps there's a new media aspect of that in that I do think blogging tends to attract critical people.
Yeah.
And not cheerleaders. Any comment that's usually populated by people wanting to throw spitballs at
or
you.
Or glitter.
Wanting to pat you on the back. So to the extent, I mean, I certainly sit on the left plenty, but perhaps that dynamic exists on the right too, where those voices get more air, get more oxygen than maybe they existed under Bush, maybe they existed in the 90s, but they
yeah.
tend to get more traction.
And by the way, you
keep
mentioning Bush. It's probably a good segue for me. Because I think one of the mistakes that conservatives made in the early part of the Bush years, and I'm lucky, I didn't start blogging until the mid-2000s. And one of the first things I did was oppose Bush and the Harriet Meyer. But I suspect if I'd been blogging after 9/11, I would have probably been more of a Bush sycophant, and I would have probably been reluctant to be critical of him. And that would have been a mistake. one of the things I think we learned from the Bush years is that you don't do your side any favors if you give them that criticism from your own team can be very healthy. It, number one, it shows that you're intellectually honest, and when you do say something good about them, it's taken with a little more, it's taken seriously as opposed to just being a sycophant. On the other hand, when you criticize somebody for doing something wrong, you may force them to act better next time. So you may be actually doing them a favor. Well, this week I wrote, I had a big piece on Monday pointing out Michelle Bachmann's positions or vote, questionable things that she's, and by the way, she's likely to enter the race very soon, and these are questions that she's going to have to confront. Things like being part of, and writing a letter encouraging a pardon that she later took back of a donor of hers. Things like, her legislative experience, her effectiveness, which is called into question. Her family takes farm subsidies, which is interesting to a conservative. When I farm, she argues that she doesn't personally benefit, and that's, I have no reason to doubt that. But there were a lot of issues like this, and, Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levin really went after me. And again, I think it's interesting for a couple reasons. For one, I think that everything, nobody, by the way, nobody questioned anything I wrote in terms of it not being accurate. It was that I'm aiding and abetting the left by going after her. I think I'm actually, first of all,
This is the dynamic that I'm used to on the right, where you tend to see a closing of ranks and not open warfare, regardless of what the charge is. Whereas I tend to see on the left, even the smallest transgressions usually have everyone piles on and tries to distance themselves from the culprit as
right.
soon as they can.
Well, in this case, I think what I wrote was journalistically fair and accurate. But the criticism was that I'm basically aiding and abetting the enemy, that I'm, taking down this woman who's done so much to fight Obamacare and everything.
When you're trying to install conservative
purity. Well, number one, I'm trying to write something interesting, which is accurate and true. Issues that if she runs, and it appears that she... By the way, when you start flirting with running for president, I think that you invite a certain amount of scrutiny. But also, I think that, look, if conservatives just allow her to pass millions and millions of dollars worth of earmarks and don't question it, then they're going to get more people passing earmarks. So, I think there's a variety of reasons why I'm proud of this piece and I stand behind it. But I was attacked by talk radio. Now, I was really pleasantly surprised. I assumed that I was going to be destroyed, that when Levin and Limbaugh come after you,
These are the big guns. I mean, people know Rush, of course. People on the left might not realize that Levin is pretty much of that same tier.
Right. And it's funny. I grew up, I still love Rush Limbaugh. I grew up listening, I've been listening to Rush since 1988 when he went national. Mark Levin, I don't have the same reverence for.
He's newer on the scene, but he's pretty good.
Yeah, and I think, wasn't he like, he's tight with Sean Hannity for, and he's a smart and credible guy, if you look at his resume at least. But anyway, I was actually very pleasantly surprised by the amount of people on Twitter who came to my defense and said, this is legitimate, it's a good story. I was actually very surprised. I expected that it would be like lemmings following killers. And I was really, it sort of like restored my faith that there were so many people out there who sided with me. Who knew?
Well, and there seems to be a weakening of the Republican Party establishment, perhaps weakening of the conservative movement establishment that are probably most personified by conservative talk radio, to the point where things are a lot more open. Relatively speaking, and no one's going to get completely drummed out of the choir by voicing them.
Well, and here's the interesting thing too. I mean, as you know, I had a little tiff one time on Blogging Heads with David Frum. I mean, I've been very critical of the David Frums of the world. And, but what happens is that whenever, you know, whenever you as a conservative, whenever you say something that somebody doesn't like, you get as a rhino. And I do think there are rhinos. I think David Frum is a rhino. I don't think he's a legitimate conservative, and I've said so. But when David Ferdoso or Jim Garrity Mark Hemingway, legitimate conservative journalists, when they voice an analysis such as saying that Christine O'Donnell isn't a great candidate, and they're accused of apostasy, I think that's wrong. And a lot of times, the stuff that I'm attacked for, and I think people like Jim Garrity, and I think people like David Ferdoso, these are, you know, conservative journalists. I think the funny part is it's not about policy. It's not because they said, let's raise taxes or whatever. It's because of, like, analysis. It's because saying Christine O'Donnell isn't a grid. And God forbid, because, you know, that's, like, off limits. But anyway, interesting, though, discussion, and I want to give out a link here. So there's a blogger or a blog called bornafterreagan.wordpress.com. And this guy, if you've been between me and Levin, just bornafterreagan.wordpress.com. And those three links to all the pertinent facts. And but he really raises this question, whether or not talk radio is sort of a vestige of the 20th century. And he says, you know, a lot of people listen to Levin and Rush and Hannity and all the other conservative radio hosts around the nation. You know, we know they're influential. But these guys are on the radio. Most young people don't listen to the radio. They're on during the time, you know, when we're driving to and from work, which to me, they ought to be listening to the radio at that point, but maybe they're listening to the CDs or something or podcasts. Most young people don't do that either. Okay, so they don't drive to and from work. Anyway, like, sort of essentially making a generational argument, which is that talk radio, which is still incredibly powerful, I think we would agree, but maybe isn't what it used to be. And I think people who are talk radio hosts, sort of like we're talking about Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton, I think they used to be able to get away with saying stuff. I mean, they had callers. There were always callers who called in. I mean, sometimes you have screeners who screen calls. But by and large, I mean, they had callers, but by and large, it's a one-way medium where if you're the host, you're powerful. And you can say things that aren't maybe always true, maybe they're an exaggeration, and you never really got caught on it. And I think that world is ending. And look, I don't want to say that I'm like a martyr for the blogosphere and that like this proves that like bloggers are finally equal to talk radio, because I don't think that's true in the conservative movement yet. But I think it raises a question, like, is it a generational thing? Will talk radio, you know, 5 years from now be as dominant as it is today? I don't think so.
Well, there seems to be this dichotomy on the right where people on the right seem to be looking for these very true examples of pure conservative principles, but there is disagreement on who exactly is the best person or people to carry that torch, and the various leaders of either the movement, none of them are getting a universal agreement that they are the lights to follow. Mm-hmm. So someone like Matt Lewis, you know, who I would say is conservative as they come, can say, I don't think this person is properly articulate conservatism. This person's doing it better, and Rush or Levin could say something different.
Levin.
Sorry.
You're gonna have me say it wrong. Maybe I just call him Levin for fun.
A post last week expressing some surprise that here. I mean, Newt Gingrich has been almost the face of conservatism for years, and when he tried to essentially bring conservatism over on the issue of climate change, to essentially, I mean, Gingrich never literally disavowed his own comments that climate change isn't really happening, but he made a shift in emphasis in 2007, 2008, He did a big debate with John Kerry. He cut the ad with Pelosi for Gore's nonprofit, where he essentially was trying to say to conservatives, look, it's time that we debate the best way to deal with climate change and not debate whether it's actually happening or not. And he was unable to bring any conservative along with him. So he's now being treated as an apostate on that issue, and his leadership credibility within the movement seems to have taken a bruising. So that seems to be perhaps a precursor to the difficulties that I think almost all Republican leaders are having right now, or talk radio leaders are having right now, of being seen as the definitive word on what conservatism is, even though, you know, as I think Jonathan Chait and others have noted, that the House Republican budget is being treated like a litmus test. If you're not for this budget, you're not a real conservative. So that's in the ether. But you don't have necessarily a single individual. I mean, not even Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan gets beat around for being a little impure on things like the debt limit and TARP. So you don't have purity of leadership, but even though there's some sense of purity on certain policies.
Yeah, it is. I think it's partially a fact of there being of post Bush there being no obvious successor. I think part of it is that we now live in a time when people question everything. You don't belong to a political party your whole life. You don't work at a company for 40 years and get a gold watch. So I think it's much harder for there to be consensus on anybody or anything. Everyone sort of has their own rodeo, their own website, their own Twitter feed. I think there are a variety of reasons for it. And I also think, frankly, that there will be someone at some point who becomes the de facto leader. But right now, there isn't a leader. It's like
I think it was in the New Republic today, and the name of the author escapes me, so forgive me, making the case that there is a systematic reason why there isn't a good Republican bench for the presidency, because in the early part of the last decade, there were not a lot of new governors and senators elected to establish a record and a profile at just the right point of freshness that you'd be seen as plausible to be a national leader and run for the presidency. And either folks are been around the block for way too long, or been out of office for too long, or they just got elected in 2008, 2010, and they're too.
No, you're right. Actually, the bench is very strong, but it's strong for 2016. Nikki Haley, Marco Rubio, Susana Martinez, Governor, soon to be Governor Mike Pence, Chris Christie, Bobby Jindal, after he's a two-term. I think that 2016 there could be a great bench, but it's like a thing with your veterans too long. You're winning the Super Bowl, so you don't put time into bringing up rookies or getting the draft picks, or you trade away your draft picks for veterans or whatever in baseball. You don't develop your farm team. That's what happened. And so you end up having all these retreads like Tommy Thompson and George Allen, who are back once again running for Senate seats. And it's just the Bush era over. And these are guys I got sick of 5-10 years ago. And you just can't get rid of these people. It's like they keep coming back.
But even the names that you just ticked off as your potential, 16ers, outside of Christie, are those folks really? I mean, they're making some news for themselves sometimes. I see Nikki Haley mentioned a lot because she's sort of flaunting her role as a potential kingmaker in the South Carolina primary. But are they really doing the job of establishing what modern conservatism should be, establishing a record in their states, or if it's in the Senate, in their voting record? Like, this is what conservatism has to offer for the problems of the day, or is it all just in the sense of what their potential is?
Well, look, I have to has something to prove, and they're new. Marco Rubio has only been in the Senate for 4 months. But I think he especially has a little potential. He's taking the lead on a lot of issues. He's gutsy, smart, articulate. So I think it's very possible that Marco Rubio is the presidential, you know, nominee for the Republicans in 2016, depending on how things go.
Now, one other scrap in the Republican primary field seems to be that some of the supporters of Bachman, supporters of Palin, are starting to get some friction.
A little bit. Let me talk about this. I'm going to do a shameless self-promotion and talk about this picture. I don't know if people can see it behind me. I have a book coming out in June. We should promote this. The Quotable Rogue, The Ideals of Sarah Palin in Her Own Words. I basically edited this book, wrote the foreword, and it is Sarah Palin's words, which are much more eloquent than you probably think. When I put this book together, I was really surprised to read the words, how eloquent they are. And I wrote a piece, as you know, this week. I talked about it earlier. Really, two pieces. I wrote a piece early in the week about Michelle Bachman, which drew a lot of controversy. I wrote a piece later in the week pointing out that, by the way, with Mike Huckabee out of the race, Donald Trump out of the race, Sarah Palin is now coming in second in the latest Gallup poll. She's down by 2 points to Mitt. Sarah Palin could definitely still get in this race and definitely win the nomination, and nobody's talking about it. Nobody thinks she's going to get in. She could win Iowa. She could win social conservatives and southern conservatives, and people aren't, for whatever reason, are writing her off. Well, interestingly, Michelle Bachman has taken some of the Palin fire. And there's a website. Actually, I think this is the most prominent Palin website out there. I don't want to offend any of the Palin people who might buy my book, but it's called Conservatives for Palin, the number 4, and states this piece, and it really says, I often hear or read conservatives comparing Michelle Bachman to Governor Palin, but I've never really understood the comparison. They're both conservatives who happen to be female, but their records are remarkably different. In all honesty, I find it insulting to Governor Palin to be continually compared to a House member just beginning her third term. I mean, no personal offense to Michelle Bachman, but Governor Palin has a wealth of accomplishments and a real record of reform. The Congresswoman doesn't. And this actually goes back to links to my piece a lot, pointing out, talking about Bachman's record or lack thereof, in some cases.
This is a pro Palin blogger.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it.
It's not someone who's in Palin's inner circle.
No, but
I'm just making the point that it's interesting that perhaps this friction might occur from the bottom up, even though the Palin and Bachman camps themselves might not be trying to get
right.
a scrap.
No, it's very possible that they. It's very possible that they, for all I know, the Bachman people have Palin's blessing to run and her, know that she's not, I don't know. But the supporters of Palin are not on board with Bachman, at least a lot, and this is, emblematic of that, I think.
I mean, I think from a liberal perspective, people tend to look at, I think, Palin and Bachman as two sides of the same coin. Just because their personas and their style of politics are so identical. It's not just that they're conservative women. No one's equating Sarah Palin and Kay-Bailey Hutchinson.
Both are very attractive. Both have a bit of a Minnesota accent, even though Palin's obviously from...
And they also, they both say similarly provocative things.
Right.
They use very...
Red meat, hardcore...
Pointed rhetoric.
Conservative red meat.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, there are those stylistic similarities, but certainly, what Palin did as governor of Alaska, and there's all sorts of idiosyncrasies to being governor of Alaska, compared to what types of bills you champion as a member of the House... I imagine this blogger is making the point because they recognize, they're going to occupy somewhat of the same space in a presidential primary, and so it behooves one to say, hey, wait a second, my candidate's got the strong record here for whatever reason.
Yeah. It's like if you're a Skid Row fan, people assume you like Warren, but you probably hate Warren. You think, you know, or whatever, right? If you like Merle Haggard, hate George Jones. It doesn't mean you like him. I don't know. You hate him because
only one can become CMA Entertainer of the Year.
That's right. 5 years running. Take that, Toby.